The following is an unrehearsed interview with Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. Participating in today's public affairs program is Darren Svensson of KDEC Radio and Decorah and Eric Van Sickle of Waverly Newspapers. Darren, you can start us off with a question for Senator Grassley.
Senator, as you very well know by now, Brett Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court. Looking back at the hearings that were completed recently and the process to nominate Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, in your role as the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, do you feel you could have done anything differently to make the process a little more smooth and a little less contentious than it was?
I think if I'd done anything differently, it would have been more heavy-handed, and I think things would have been worse. So I tried to be as fair and thorough as I could. And by the way, I promised a fair and thorough process, and I think we had one. And from the standpoint of information about a nominee, we had historic transparency, documents equal to the last five added together. So there was enough information. And I think that we particularly did well by making sure that Dr. Ford had a fair hearing. I tried to meet every demand that she had. Obviously, there was some negotiations that went on, but she wanted to make sure that Kavanaugh was not at the table with her. She wanted to make sure that there was a limited amount of press, only one or two television cameras. She wanted some breaks. We made sure she got the breaks. Everything like that. So I think that she did a good thing by bringing the issue of sexual assault to the attention. I think it emphasizes the Me Too thing that started a year or so ago because of sexual harassment in liberal Hollywood and within the news media that you've seen, that we're getting the proper attention to a problem in our society. And I praise Dr. Ford for it, even though she wanted total anonymity. And there was a leak that I can't except say it came from the Democrats because no Republicans had the information, that she didn't get that part of it. So anyway, that's where we are, and so nothing different. So let's go to Eric.
Hi, well, speaking of the thoroughness of the confirmation hearings, at least 40 people had come forward to either cooperate to Dr. Blasey Ford's accounts as well as either also Ramirez's and or Swetnick's accounts, or counter Kavanaugh's accounts of what happened in the 80s and such forth. But those people were not interviewed, nor were Blasey Ford, nor Kavanaugh by the FBI. So how could you call the FBI investigation thorough if those people weren't given full interviews in that investigation?
Okay. Well, we had 27 people come to our committee after we got the nomination. And that's after we got the first FBI report. And don't forget, the first FBI report was really six FBI reports. And so we followed up on every one of those. So what the committee could do, we did, and we did thoroughly. In regard to other people that you might say, whether it's 40 extra or 13 extra from what I'm telling you about, either way, they would have been within the jurisdiction of the FBI to follow up on, and we didn't have access to them, nor did they ask, like Dr. Ford did, to appear before the committee. So the FBI director said today that the FBI, well, by the way, the FBI director said today because he had an oversight hearing before the Homeland Security, and even though he wasn't before the Judiciary Committee, he said something very fundamental to your question. He said today that the FBI followed its standard process for background investigations. Now it's back to Darren.
Continuing related to this, the hearing obviously got very contentious. Looking back at this process a couple of years ago when your party chose to not give Merrick Garland a hearing as a nominee of President Obama, had your party been a little bit more willing to at least have a hearing in that situation, do you think it would have gotten as contentious as it did?
Well, we couldn't have a hearing. If we did have a hearing, we would have been treating Republican presidents different than Democrat presidents, because you don't want to forget that this whole process of not having a hearing during a presidential election year started with Biden several years back, repeated by Senator Schumer more recently, that if there's going to be a vacancy during a presidential election year, you should wait till after the election. So based upon the principle that you can't have one rule for Republicans and a different rule for Democrats, that's why we didn't have a hearing on Garland. And so we were on very sound footing for not having that. So that couldn't affect anything. Well, I mean, it may have had some resentment on the part of the Democrats, an unfair resentment, because I quoted Democrats setting up this process and not having a hearing during a presidential election year. So having followed that precedent, maybe that being mad about Republicans not taking up Garland carried over till now, but then there's nothing I can do about that. Eric Van Sickle.
Well, I gotta follow up on that because, one, there really is no Biden rule. That was a hypothetical. Two, no. Wait a minute.
Let me correct you. I'll have my staff send you the speeches where he said these things, and I'll have you send the speeches where Reid said the same thing and where Schumer said the same thing. So there may not be a written rule. Call it whatever you want to. Just leave the, you can say precedent, you can say agreement, you can say statement. It's not a written rule, yes, but there is a Biden statement of what backs up what I said. Now go ahead with your question.
And before I change the subject, there is also three other opportunities in history where the opposite party Senate confirmed a Supreme Court nominee on an election year. Anyways, changing the subject now, we wanted to go to yesterday's speech in Council Bluffs where President Trump announced that he's instructing the Environmental Protection Agency to allow E15 to be sold all year round. In other words, dropping the ban during the summer between June 1st and September 15th. So what do you feel this means for Iowa farmers, as well as yourself, since you are a farmer in New Hartford? And then also, how much will this balance the tariff battle, over, especially between the U.S. and China?
Between the U.S. and China, probably not right now. There was more concern about our corn not getting into Mexico or our dairy products not getting into China. So I think the president has gone a long ways to show that his efforts are paying off with the U.S.-Mexico-Canadian agreement and NAFTA no longer in our vocabulary. So I think that kind of takes care of itself. Then you get to this agreement. I think the really big thing here is this, that first of all, based upon the ethanol industry itself, looking at the price of corn, E15, if we didn't get it, 2-3 years down the road, prices would be even more catastrophically low than they are right now. Now, there's a few places in Iowa where they're selling E15, but not enough. And the reason you don't get enough is because people that are filling station operators aren't going to invest in E15 pumps if they can only sell 8 months out of the year. So you don't get the capital investment to get the distribution you need. And I think with this E15 announcement, you're going to get the capital investment and more opportunities for people to put E15 in their pumps. Let's go back to Darren.
Related to the ag economy, Senator, I know you're not directly involved on the conference committee trying to figure out a settlement to a new farm bill, but based on what you understand right now, are we anywhere close to getting an agreement on the new farm bill, and what's the holdup?
No, and the holdup is that the House of Representatives and the President insist on work requirements for food stamp participants, and we can't get 60 votes in the United States Senate for it. And even though it could be considered good policy, as long as you don't include older people, disabled people, or people with children, if you can't get 60 votes, you aren't going to get a 5-year farm bill. And so there's nothing going to happen before the election. Something might happen in December in a lame duck, only if the House backs down. And if the House doesn't back down, then we're going to have to extend the 2014 farm bill for one more year. Back to Darren. I'm sorry, Eric, go ahead, please. Yeah.
All right, now, sorry to have to go return to the Kavanaugh thing, but this is a question that my editor, Anelia Dimitrova, asked me to ask you. How will you explain the Kavanaugh confirmation process to your grandchildren and great-grandchildren, especially your granddaughters and great-granddaughters?
Fair and thorough process, historic transparency, and then I think I would give them the answer today that I learned 28 years ago, when exactly the same controversy evolved around Clarence Thomas, and I've watched Clarence Thomas for 28 years, and I haven't heard any retribution or any complaint about him being on the court. There might be disagreements with these decisions, but unrelated to anything that was a controversy during his nomination. I would see the same thing for Kavanaugh. The only thing is we've got more evidence for Kavanaugh than we even had evidence for Clarence Thomas because of his 12 years on the D.C. circuit and his very positive statements he gets from people that are in his classes when he teaches at Harvard, law clerks, and particularly from female law clerks, about the opportunity that he's given women in the practice of law where there's great discrimination against women. So everything that he's had to do that deals with relationships with women have been very, very positive based upon the massive amount of communication and number of people that have signed letters and petitions in support of him. Just an outstanding record of collegiality in the courts, an outstanding record of promoting young lawyers, male and female, and being the first justice in the history of the Supreme Court to have all of his four clerks be female. Okay, Darren, yours will be the last question.
Yesterday, the news came out that Nikki Haley is stepping down as UN ambassador for the United States. She was probably one of the most bipartisan nominees approved by the Senate. I believe she was approved by a 96-4 vote. How do you see this potentially affecting relations with the United States, and who do you see filling her shoes, and how tough shoes will it be to fill her shoes?
First of all, I wish she weren't not leaving. It's a personal choice. You have to honor that. She's had about 18 years of public life. She probably wants to do something else. I'm told that she told the president 6 months ago she's going to leave at the end of the year. I told that she told the president she was only going to serve there 2 years. So that's her choice. Now, getting back to the other part of your question, she is one of the few that I ever thought were willing to stand up against countries that do not respect human rights like we do in America and call them out for it. In other words, there's a lot of people on the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations that don't even allow women to drive cars, as an example. Just think of that sort of discrimination. She spoke up against it. And that sort of loud voice for the United States to be in a position of leadership on moral things that we believe in and our Constitution practices, I just hope that the president will seek far and wide somebody that can be as far-reaching as she is in leadership at the UN, because it's badly needed.